You're listening to Giles Brown on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. We're the biggest band in Britain of all time ever. The funny thing is, all that mouthing off 3 years ago about how we were going to be the biggest band in the world, we actually went and did it. They were the biggest band in the world. In Supersonic, they tell the story of their beginnings from a dive bar somewhere in the northwest to playing the enormity of Nebworth. It's all been written in a new book by Simon Half, and my guest today, the author of Supersonic, Simon. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
Good to have you with us. Tell us, I mean, it's 25, 26, quarter of a century ago now. Seems like only yesterday. But for those who weren't there, Oasis were, without doubt, the biggest band in the UK, if not the world, in the 90s.
Yeah, most definitely. What was interesting about Oasis is that they came, they had this huge success. It was 2.5 years from signing off to playing Nebworth, those two famous nights at Nebworth, where they had in excess of 2.1 million applications for tickets. And this is old-fashioned applications for tickets, where you had to pick up a phone or send in a postal order or a check, and not today's logging onto to a website. And it was just a phenomenon, really, where the songs were obviously fantastic, but it was the band, the attitude, and it kind of became at one with the zeitgeist, whatever was going on certainly in this country. And then it had that ripple effect. Well, it went to America, it went to Japan, it went to Europe. So it's sort of a fascinating story in the sense that it happened so quickly, but the fact that the songs still stand up to this day, and they mean so much to so many people. When we did the film 5 years ago, Supersonic, that is, I remember when Noel came to me just to sort of ask me if I was up for doing it in the first place, because I'd had a relationship with them and a friendship with them. I designed some of their sort of mid-period album covers, and Noel said, listen, we're thinking about doing this, how busy are you? We're thinking of doing like a little documentary to coincide with the 25th anniversary, or the 20th anniversary of Nebworth, as it was back then. And I sort of ripped both his arms off, I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And as soon as he kind of left, I kind of got thinking that this was a film. This wasn't a Channel 4, 5 past midnight on a Friday night for an hour. This was a kind of feature film that could be shown in the cinemas, because it was a real moment in time. It was, as I said, it was a phenomenon. And so the first kind of people that I reached out to were the guys that made Senna, Asif Kapadia and James Gay Rees, and said, listen, you up for having a meeting with Noel about this? And they, again, jumped at it. And Asif came on board as an executive producer, and I ended up producing with James and another lovely lady called Fiona Nielsen. And we sort of elevated it into something that was much more, I think. It became this cinema film, and, Matt Whitecross, who directed it, did an absolutely fantastic job in capturing that time, which, the band were thrilled with. The end result, the fans were thrilled with it, and the critics loved it. So we had a kind of something pretty special in the film, but all the film did really was capture that moment and that love that people had for that band, and still do.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, that is the zeitgeist. I mean, that is the high watermark. 1996, okay? We've got the culture, it's the cool Britannia again. It's Britpop. We've got Blur versus Oasis. You were one or t'other, basically. Yeah. You've got Euro 96. Who can forget that summer with, the England and Terry Venables and Gascoigne and the whole situation? Yeah. And the build-up to Nebworth. I mean, I was a young man in London at the time. I was at the right age. It was part of my culture. And I remember them being announced. And there was a, as you said, you went and bought tickets, but there was a swelling. You had to be there. You had to know somebody who was going to be there. And in the end, it was, if you like, almost like a Woodstock for the Britpop generation. I mean, Robbie Williams, before he got clean, was there with cans of lager. Anybody who wasn't in the Blur camp wanted to be in the Oasis camp.
Yeah, and what's interesting as well is that, by Noel's own admission, and he said this himself lately, so it was sort of towards the late 90s when Oasis became a bit laddish and a bit blokish, and use the word he uses is yobbish. But at this time, it was still very much equally between boys and girls. And it was a kind of a shared experience. And seeing the Nebworth film kind of highlights that it was just kind of all comers, really. It wasn't as it came to be later with, you know, when it got a bit laddish.
Mm. The other thing is trying to explain to people, you know, in an era of downloads, you know, when you go online, every release is everything at the same time. Waiting for What's the Story, Morning Glory to come out, right? And there was that anticipation, and then it came out. And I remember I bought it on cassette. That dates me. I bought it on cassette the first time, but everybody got that album, and it was an event. It wasn't, have you just downloaded Sheeran's, you know, 12 tracks? It was, blimey, what is this?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It is that, I mean, and that's kind of highlighted in both the book now and the film, is that this Oasis were kind of the last band, and Nebworth perhaps the last great event that came into play before the internet. You know, there's no one at Nebworth holding up a phone. The phones didn't have cameras on them then. It was literally experience. And that was my sort of takeaway from watching the film, actually, was that people were kind of just experiencing the moment and experiencing being there rather than, you know, texting their mates or, you know, going on Instagram or whatever else that they would be doing. They're really living the moment. And I think that's what is so special about that time, is that, as I say, in those 2.5 years, they went from playing, you know, small clubs to having that huge demand for tickets. And it was all done by word of mouth. It was all, you know, it wasn't, you know, obviously they had the support of certain music papers and radio and television along the way, but it didn't start off that way. You know, it was just that kind of word of mouth, and you had to be there to experience it. You couldn't Google, get on your phone or get on your computer and Google, what's this band like? You had to go and see them, or you had to catch a glimpse of them on Top of the Pops or The Word or whatever it was. So that's what's fascinating about them. And that's what was the sort of the inspiration for going back to the transcripts, because we spent so much time interviewing you know, Noel and Liam. We did 16 hours, I think, with Noel, and we did 12 with Liam, plus, you know, all the people that were closest to the band.
Yeah.
And there was so, and the film was only 2 hours long, and the film's also got music in it. And there was so much stuff that we couldn't put in the film, just purely because it couldn't fit. And you have to kind of, you know, a film has to have a kind of beginning, middle, and an end, yeah, and an arc. And so you have to sort of make that work. And I said to Noel and Liam, I said, we've got so much great stuff here. Let's do a book. And they both jumped at it, because it's almost feels like it's a bookend, forgive the pun, to that project, but it almost feels like it's the last word on that period, because it really just focuses on them forming the band and ending up with them playing in front of, you know, quarter of a million people at Nebworth.
And also, I mean, it's a great story. I mean, I interviewed Paul a while back, who had Liam cleaning cars for at Manchester United back in the day, and, you know, the big un. And it's really, you know, and they've always been, so it's a real, they weren't art school, you know, they weren't university, you know, they weren't home counties, navel gazing prog rock. It was real rock and roll. And from Alan McGee seeing them at King Tut's famously, and then the rise just went, as the title is, supersonic. And they were bloody good value, weren't they?
Yeah, most definitely. And you know, I think the other thing about Oasis is, you know, Noel and Liam are kind of like movie star rock stars. You know, in a funny sort of way, you couldn't write them, because you sort of, if you were writing those as characters, someone would say, tone it down a bit, you know, because they are kind of larger than life and they are great characters. And the thing also, I mean, I you know, I was had the good fortune of spending a, you know, fair bit of time with them over 10 years. And they've just funny. You just spent 90% of your time that you were with them laughing. And that, I think, also comes across in the book, is the kind of humor, and their way of seeing things and their way of describing things. You know, just no one's sort of come along and kind of stolen their crown since. You know, they've been, you know, great bands, whether it's the Arctic Monkeys or Coldplay or any of the bands that may have overlapped, but there's never been, I don't think there's been a band where you know, the two front men, as it were so instantly recognizable. And, you know, even if you didn't know, never heard an Oasis song back then, which is unlikely, granted, but whatever generation you were, you certainly knew who they were.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, is the fact that, you know, brilliant live, as the film proves. And also, Noel is a fantastic songwriter. You may say, well, he ripped off a load of Beatles riffs, but then you could say, well, the Beatles and the Stones ripped off, particularly the Stones ripped off black American music from the 30s, 40s and 50s.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the songs, if it wasn't, you know, we wouldn't be talking about them today if they were just these great characters. You know, it is the songs that have stood the test of time. And they still sound great. There's no two ways about it. You know, Noel's one of the great songwriters.
I mean, you said you've known them, you've worked, you've interviewed them. What was it like to be in the eye of that storm then? Because, you know, I remember that the period. Maybe Comes Out. And we go. I remember watching The White Room, which was a Channel 4 music program. With Radcliffe, Mark Radcliffe, and some might say coming on the they were doing it live, and I remember just stopping everything and with my then girlfriend going, listen to this, and then there was that roller coaster, that ride, and then we had What's the Story of Morning Glory, and then we had, you know, the Nebworth appearance, and then there was that great build up as well until Be Here Now, and that was like a huge media event anyway. What was it, and the pressure on them must have been immense. You know, they were world conquering. What was it like being in the eye of that storm?
Well, I can, you know, for the early years, I was actually living in Los Angeles. So I would see them when they came into town. You know, I was at that famous Whiskey A Go-Go gig, although I hadn't met them at that point. I met them very early on when they came in to shoot a Supersonic video. In the US, and that's, we kind of hit it off right away. And then I'd see them every time they sort of breezed through town. And then I moved back in 96 and Noel lived up the road, and I'd sort of see quite a bit of him because we sort of had that connection through Paul Weller, and because I was designing Paul's album covers at the time. But it was interesting. I think you see the sort of, you know, there'd always be people hanging outside the house and all that kind of thing. I remember there was one incident actually that made me think, God, this is just weird, that I'd gone out for a sort of wander around the West End with Liam. And this must have been about probably a bit later, around about 98, 99. And I just remember walking down just off Bond Street, and we ended up going to Jeffrey Archer's gallery of all places. But I just remember just walking down the street with him. And, you know, Liam's got this kind of gait that you can spot from half a mile the way he walks. And I just remember kind of, you know, with these people looking out of windows and pointing, and girls coming out of offices. It was just almost like the Pied Piper, even though he wasn't doing anything other than just walking down the road. And I remember thinking, God, this is weird. You know, it's almost felt slightly Beatlesque, where you kind of thought that's what it must have been like being a Beatle, where, you know, people come and get a glimpse of someone out of an office window, and everyone starts pointing, and every window had someone in pointing, and people were coming down onto the street. It was just, it's odd, you know, and it's got to affect you, isn't it?
It affects you, but I mean, at the same time, they did sort of like, they didn't change. They didn't suddenly become, you know, patrons of the arts. They did a bit of the rock star with the marriages to famous people, Patsy Kensit, etc. But they didn't, you know, they weren't being untrue to who they were. They still behaved in the same way. They still had the arguments and fell out.
Oh yeah, no. But even just as people, you know, that they would just, as I said, you know, you'd spend 90-95% of the time with those guys just laughing. You know, that hadn't changed. They were the same guys. I mean, they became very savvy very quickly. You know, Noel especially, he kind of knew what was going on, and you know, he very much sort of steered the ship back then. But at the same time, it wasn't at the cost of anything that affected him in his sort of personality or the way that he was. You know, it was still great fun to be around, and, you know, always very charming, you know, all of them really.
How was it, what was it like then, you know, you did the film, but to put together and go back over the interviews and go back through all the photographs and the artwork that you did? I mean, yeah. I know we must sound like 105 years old now to people who didn't get it, but I mean, it was an incredible time.
Oh no, absolutely. And it was, because it was like starting from scratch, really, because I went back to all the transcripts, and this is quite overwhelming, really. But as you're reading them, you just think, oh my God, this is gold. You know, it's either comedy gold or just factual gold or whatever it was. And so it was a real joy to do, actually. And it was so great to have the support of both Noel and Liam. And, you know, they've read the edited transcripts, and, you know, both gave it the thumbs up right away. And so it's just great to have their support, really. And as I say, because they both love the film so much and were both so supportive of the film, this just feels like a really nice way to cap it off and put everything in that we couldn't get in the film.
And the other thing is, of course,
there's so much.
The imagery, and, you know, they both do photograph well, and like I said, the artwork that went with the album covers is iconic. I mean, people recognize it heads off. Even if you say a couple of blokes lying in their living room or a couple of blokes walking down a street somewhere near Soho, that doesn't sound like a very good cover. But when you see those two, you just go, yeah, that's the one, because
it was great to be able to look through all that stuff, and that's what's nice about the book. I mean, it's 400 pages, and it's a real kind of page turner, in the sense that I didn't want to do the fact that the sort of the template for it was that the Beastie Boys did a book two or three years ago, and I didn't want to do a coffee table book. I wanted it to be a book that you could have by your bedside, or just a book that you could pick up and read. And so it's, you know, it's a nice chunky 400 pages, you know, fully illustrated with all these great images, as you pointed out, and some perhaps haven't been seen for a while, some that haven't been seen at all. And it was nice that the management gave us full access to their archives as well. So there's some nice sort of handwritten bits and pieces in there that haven't been seen the light of day before. We just wanted to make it the complete, but the really nice companion piece to the film, which, because I had a lot to live up to, because the book had to be as good as the film, in my view. You didn't want to do something that's kind of a watered down version of the film. It had to sort of offer something that the film didn't have time to do. It had to be more.
What was your favorite memory of the period then with the band? Was it, you know, that gig at Nebworth? Was it, you know, the excitement? Was it walking down the street with Liam and his unmistakable gait, as you said?
I was very fortunate. They in the sort of mid to late 90s, they used to have a rehearsal. Well, it was a recording studio, actually, that they rented out in near High Wycombe. It was called Wheeler End, and, you know, I was always welcome there. So, you know, Noel would say, "What are you doing in your comp studio? Bring your camera." So I used to really sort of value and cherish those times, because you never took it for granted that you're sitting there with these five guys playing the same set. You know, they'd rehearse there, and it would be, you know, in a room, you know, probably bigger than someone's living room, but not much bigger. So it wasn't like a huge cavernous space. And I'd be sitting there, you know, as close as I am to my hand, and these five guys are playing the same set a week later they'd be playing in front of 75,000 people at Wembley. You know, so I never took that for granted. And there was always, you know, I did a book for them, all the photos, just for them as a little gift, and the book was called Sandwiches and Insults, because that's what it is. You used to put on a sandwich, and everyone used to insult each other. You hear a bit of music and go home. So, but that was the time. Those are the times that I really enjoyed, because it was just, they just made you feel part of the team, and that was always never took that for granted.
The book is called Supersonic. If people want to find out more information about the book or about you, where can they find you, Simon? Is there a website? Where can they actually...
I've got a website, actually, which has got an odd title, which is called Nempera. It's like emperor, but with an N in front of it, .com. That's the sort of a Brian Epstein reference, because I'm sort of a huge Beatles fan. But that'll have some details and links to wherever. But you can buy the book anywhere, you know, wherever you bookshops...
And you'll be able to download it as a virtual book from our virtual website as well. What's up for you?
Yeah, all sorts of things. Yeah.
What's up for you? What's up for you next then? What are you up to at the moment?
Just a few other little projects. It was nice to sort of do a bit of artwork again with Noel. I worked on his High Flying Birds best of, so it was nice to do that. I've got a couple of sort of documentary projects which look like they're sort of moving forward on a couple of things. So there's a few interesting things on the horizon. So yeah, it's been quite a good time of late, actually. And so I did a book of all my nonsense, all my record sleeves and photos, for which it came out last year, which sold out. So I'm sort of looking into doing a kind of a sort of paperback version of that. So I'm kind of putting that together at the minute as well.
Well, we may speak of that then at a future date. This book is called...
So nice to talk to you.
Well, you know, the pleasure's all mine. The book is called Supersonics by Simon Halfen. Simon, thank you so much for your time today.
Lovely. Real pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for your time.